Welcome back to this week's edition of the Midweek Reality Check with Michael Pinto, where I try to keep Wall Street and your money real. This week's podcast is titled Yellen, Looking for Inflation in All the Wrong Places. In 1958, economist W.H. Phillips wrote a paper that argued an inverse relationship existed between wage inflation and unemployment. The crux of his theory was when unemployment is high, wages increase slowly. But when unemployment is low, wages rise rapidly. Phillips established his theory under the framework of a curve, and it was aptly referred to as the Phillips curve. However, many economists wrongly adopted the Phillips curve by relating it to general price inflation rather than just wage inflation. Sadly for Phillips curve enthusiasts, the high inflation and high unemployment of the 1970s turned this metric on its head. Stagflation in the U.S. throughout the 1970s proved high inflation and high unemployment can, and often do, exist concurrently, thus rendering the Phillips curve obsolete. This same phenomenon, where rising inflation coincides with a rising unemployment rate, has also been witnessed throughout the globe. Fittingly, the notion that more people working was the cause of inflation should have found its place in the wall of shame of economic theories, sandwiched in between other items falling out of favor at that time, such as toe socks and the pet rock. However, the Keynesian economists who held this curve in such high esteem in the 1960s were somehow unable to let it go. Therefore, a new metric was created, rooted in the Phillips curve, but conveniently much more ambiguous. They called this metric the non-accelerating inflation rate of unemployment, also known as NARU. The idea behind NARU is inflation and unemployment really only become correlated once unemployment falls below a certain calculated rate. But you have to understand that the Fed's number for NARU is more elastic and flexible than Gumby. And when it does fall below that predetermined rate, as it did from 1996 through the year 2000, and inflation, as the Fed measures it, is still absent, the Fed must come up with an excuse for its inaction. Just to be clear, there is no relationship between unemployment and the overall rate of inflation. As Milton Friedman taught us, inflation is solely a monetary event. It is my view that inflation is caused by a persistent fall in the purchasing power of a currency. The market becomes convinced that substantial currency dilution will occur and the value of paper money falls. Even if everyone able to work became gainfully employed, it would not cause inflation. It may lead to rising nominal wages, but the increase in products and services provided by these newly employed persons would absorb the wage growth without causing prices to rise. A growing labor force and increasing productivity are the very keys to economic prosperity. But the reason it is important to understand the Phillips curve, and more importantly, NARU, is because this metric is perhaps the most important data point Janet Yellen looks at when making decisions on Fed policy. When unemployment is higher than NARU, as it is now, Yellen sounds like a dove. But when unemployment falls below, as it did in 1996 to 2000, Yellen has shown she's more ready to tighten policy than other central bankers. Ms. Yellen has an unfounded fear that too many workers will hyperinflate our deflating worldwide economy. Just to understand how unfounded these beliefs are in reality, Listen to this. The unemployment rate went from 9% in early 2000 to 5.6% today. However, during that same time frame, the CPI, consumer price inflation, went from 3.5% all the way down to 0.7% during that same time frame. This goes completely contradictory to everything Janet Yellen would have you believe. And it clearly shows that the relationship between a low unemployment rate and inflation does not exist. In fact, inflation and unemployment are both declining in tandem. I defy any Keynesian adherent to the Phillips curve or Nehru to glean the correlation between a falling unemployment rate and the rate of inflation. It was the Fed's initial belief back in 2010, when the unemployment was just south of 10%, that a change in monetary policy would be necessary once the unemployment rate reached 6.5%. Excuse me. However, since inflation and the economy have not picked up, they have since moved the new target to around 5.4%. With unemployment currently at 5.6%, we are getting dangerously close, very dangerously close, to Ms. Yellen's line in the Nehru sand. The problem is, while Janet Yellen is busy tinkering with the Phillips curve in a pernicious attempt to determine how many people she will allow to find work, she is missing the crumbling economic fundamentals all around her. The flattening yield curve, plummeting commodity prices, and weakening U.S. and international economic data all show that the asset bubbles created by central banks are popping. Once again, the Fed is applying faulty models to the wrong economic fundamentals. However, if unemployment continues to fall, Ms. Yellen will be forced by her own passionately held doctrines to raise interest rates into a deflationary cycle. Now, I welcome this move and the overdue and inevitable consequences that it brings. But also understand, the Fed will unwittingly be doing the equivalent of parking a car on the train tracks. Ms. Yellen will even have to ignore the fact that the falling unemployment rate is happening for the wrong reason, as it coincides with a falling labor force participation rate. Yet again, the Fed will be missing what is right in front of them. As usual, it is fighting yesterday's war with the wrong weapons. This pervasive and protracted incompetence has finally led the central banks in Europe, Japan, China, and the United States to now own the markets for real estate, equities, bonds, and, as a direct consequence, their entire economies. This is why the immense power to determine the money supply and level of interest rates should never have been given to a group of unelected bureaucrats. And now I want to quickly turn into my proprietary comments for my podcast subscribers. Listen to the spate of weak data that I had predicted would be the case. Since 2009, I said that the ersatz phony recovery would be anemic in nature. Excuse me. But listen to this. Just in the past week, since the last Reality Check podcast, factory orders were very disappointing. Durable goods were negative and disappointing. ISM manufacturing index missed estimates. Consumer spending was negative. Pending home sales, negative. And the GDP report, the preliminary figure for Q4, was halved from where it was in Q3. That's right, we went from a 5% growth rate to just about 2.6%. So all of the economic data, as I had indicated, illustrates that growth in the U.S. is slowing and growth around the globe is continuing to slow. Just recently, we had Chinese manufacturing data, in data that came right from the government of China, showed that their manufacturing sector is contracting for the second month in a row. So here's the problem. Here's how I see it. The S&P 500 is trading at 20 times trailing 12-month earnings. And the earnings growth rate for this quarter, year over year, is going to be just about zero. Maybe 1 or 2%, but close to zero. Earnings were supposed to grow about 8, 9%. They're almost growing not at all, which means the PEG ratio is close to 20. You do not pay 20 PEG ratio, a 20 PE to growth ratio for the S&P 500. That is unheard of. Now, the market cap to GDP is the second highest in history at 121% of our economy. And deflation abounds. And yet, this is important. And yet, as I pointed out in my commentary, the Fed still avows to raise rates just within months from now. Now, that is a recipe for a stock market sell-off. That is why the month of January was down. And we had a couple of nice days in February, but today was down. The S&P was down. The Nasdaq was down. Oil continues to go down. Now, here's our opportunity. It's still a bit early to buy exploration and production oil stocks. Oil rallied sharply on Tuesday. And a lot of people might fear that maybe we missed the boat. But it gave all of that gain back today. But there is a huge opportunity coming within the next couple of months at the most for us to get into E&P stocks and to buy the Russian economy. I have an ETF in mind that buys E&P stocks. I have an ETF in mind that will buy Russia with almost a 5% dividend. And those will be really, really good winners for us, hopefully, once the Fed backs away from raising rates. I still think they try to do it. I think we get one rate hike at most sometime in late spring, maybe in the early summer. But between here and then, there's an awful lot of hurt that has to be experienced in the stock market, because you cannot have a vastly overvalued stock market sitting on top of zero earnings growth in the face of a Federal Reserve that continually threatens to go on a rate hiking campaign. Thank you so much for listening to this edition of The Reality Check, 5 minutes of sanity in an insane world. Please remember, if you're not already an investor with PPS, you can email me directly using mpento@pentoport.com or call the office using 732-772-9500 to get information about our portfolio services. You should also go to Amazon and order my book, The Coming Bond Market Collapse. Subscribers should contact an investment advisor before acting on any information contained in this podcast. No information on this podcast constitutes an offer to sell or buy any financial instruments or to provide any investment services. Subscribers understand there's an inherent risk in investing. PPS is a registered investment advisor.